Blog Talk Radio.
Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. And tonight, the show is Kaz and Marty Live, where Kaz does all the talking and Marty just sits there and goes, uh-huh, uh-huh. Welcome to the show, Kaz.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yes, yes. I'm glad no wedding cakes tonight. Kaz, we got so much to talk about tonight, I can't stand it. And so part of what we're going to be talking about, everybody, is Kathleen Kane out there in Pennsylvania. She was the attorney general who went after these judges and attorneys for all kinds of things. And she even said in a news interview that she had never realized how corrupt it actually was until she got into it. And what ended up is they prosecuted her and put her in prison. And she just did get out in July after serving 6 months. She was let out early. Apparently, they think she learned her lesson, keep her mouth shut. We don't know what she's going to be doing from there, but we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be updating you on what's happening in Alaska and then also on a couple of cases there in Wisconsin. So, Kaz, I'm going to let you take it from here and tell them what you need them to know.
All right, well, I guess we'll start with our home state here in Wisconsin. It's kind of a quiet week. We do have Kelly Brand is out of jail now. She's banned from being on social media, but she can still send emails. So we are so glad that she is out, and it looks like, you know, she's working with her attorney, and we hope that we can have a happy ending in that whole situation. With Kelly, other family that, you know, the hotel heiress that just passed away, that family is still recovering. I've still been able to be in contact with them. And it's just, you know, it takes time. There's still a lot of hurt in that situation. And the other story that we had talked about, we're waiting for that court date to come. And I believe it's supposed to be coming in October. But you know how things can get pushed off, you know. So that's what's going on in Wisconsin. Not a lot going on, which is good. You know, we used to not see a lot of corruption here in Wisconsin, and it was quite the shock when I had heard about some of these stories, because I know all about the potholes in Pennsylvania, and hopefully we can, you know, keep it quiet, and we've put people on notice. Wisconsin is very organized. When we started doing the show here with you, Marty, I connected with other groups in Wisconsin that aren't just doing guardianship, but just really our constitutional rights, and Wisconsin is a on fire state, and we don't mess around. So on Wisconsin. And by the way, you know, let's props to the Packers while we're talking about Wisconsin.
Oh.
You're like, oh, thanks, Kaz. I'm here in Minnesota. Okay. So,
yes.
Yeah, number one.
Yeah.
Yep, I know, as everyone hangs up. Okay, now next we're going to go on to Alaska. I don't know, does Alaska have a football team? I don't even think they do. It's probably too cold up there.
No, it's cold up there, yeah.
Yeah, they just
you'd have to ship their team, you know, 10,000 miles to play a game, and nobody wants to go up there and play in the snow. So I don't think they do. If they have one, I'm not aware of it. Elaine has joined us, so she's on here.
Excellent, excellent.
But,
hey, Elaine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi.
I am. Hi, Kaz.
Hello. We are so excited to have you. We have so much to talk about. I'm just doing a quick update. I'm going to update on Alaska really quick. We don't have a hearing date yet for Cindy, but we do have some information that is been quite eye-opening. And it's like you start to just see the web of corruption just all come together. So there's a former Superior Court judge named Michael Corey, C-O-R-E-Y. He was kind of a controversial scumbag judge, and he didn't win his reelection. The people rose up, and he just, I guess he doesn't think like sex offenders should do jail time. And I don't need to repeat the graphic grossness of what, you know, this person in the courtroom did, but it made national media. But now he's working for a law firm. And what's very interesting is this scumbag judge is working at the same law firm that the former governor of Alaska, Bill Walker, just joined. And this law firm is up there in Anchorage. So, Marty, what in the world is going to be so lucrative that these politicians will go and join this one law firm in Alaska, in Anchorage, of all places, where we're starting to hear a little bit of, you know, granny snatching going on up there.
Yes, up there, not only do they get a yearly check off of the sales of oil, every Alaskan does. They just, under Walker, they also cut those checks while he tried to do some other things, which upset everybody. But they get that check in addition to their Social Security. So targeting people in Alaska just on volume alone is far more lucrative than, say, Mary Rowan working there in Detroit, who's mostly all they have is Social Security. And they might have VA or railroad retirement funds also. So, you know, that's always a plus. If you can get one that's getting multiple benefits, that's always a good day. And that's it. I read recently that 60% of the income on all major law firms across the country comes from doing guardianship and conservatorship. It's their bread and butter. It keeps the bills paid. It keeps money coming in the door. And that allows them time to work on really big cases and string those out to collect more money. So it's, you know, it's described as the fastest growing cottage industry in the country. And what we're talking about here, everyone, is the trafficking of elderly and disabled people, or even just people who have assets, maybe a trust fund. They'll find a reason. And all they have to say now is that you're incapacitated. That means you bumped your head, you got a cold. Anything qualifies as incapacity. We challenged the incompetency claim for so hard that they finally dropped that. Incompetency implies mental instability. And they couldn't prove that. They seldom anybody ever sees a psychiatrist. They have a psychiatrist that works with the court and just writes up whatever the court needs to say you're incompetent and steal your identity. It is identity theft, and hand it over to one of these predators. I was talking with a lady earlier today in an extensive conversation, and what really bothers me behind all of this, cause, and I just can't get past this, is whether it's guardianship, conservatorship, the abuses that occur in the hospitals. We just had that big report come out where they had killed hundreds of elderly people who maybe they were just a little hard to deal with, or they just decided they didn't want to take care of them anymore in these hospitals. And you've got hospice taking out the elderly people left and right. And every year, somewhere around 250,000 people on Medicare die. But you never hear anything about this. They don't come out and talk about it. You know, geez, we had 250,000 people on Medicare died. They talk about the 400,000 who came on to Social Security and are collecting Medicare, you know. And there again, I want to say something, and I'm tired of saying the same thing over and over, but get this through. Nobody gets Medicare for free. Nobody. After investing in it, and this was an investment program, it still is. All of our lives, we still have to pay these huge premiums for Medicare. And then you have the co-pays on your doctor, on the hospital, on pharmaceuticals. You have all the stuff they don't cover. So this idea that we're somehow getting free medical care, we financed this thing, in my own case, more than 50 years. This program, I'm here to collect. I invested in this all these years. I, with the anticipation that at this age, this would be available to me. Don't treat this like it's some sort of entitlement program that the taxpayers are having to fund. This is all funded by workers. And it was all funded by me and millions of other people who worked our whole lives, and while other people collected it. And I have no problem with that. And people say, oh, it's a Ponzi scheme. It's a Ponzi. Now, shut up with your Ponzi scheme. Your insurance company is a Ponzi scheme. You pay those premiums and don't say a peep. And that's all Medicare is. It is a federally run insurance program. That's all it ever was. And the idea that they treat this as though it's like we're getting some sort of welfare. There's no welfare to it. This stuff is costing us through the nose. So, you know, get off of that. Nobody gets it for free. Then there's that donut hole in Medicare from $2,500 to $5,000 where Medicare doesn't cover anything. And that's why you have to have gap insurance. That was the gift to the insurance companies to keep them quiet. You have to have gap insurance, which is usually at least as expensive, if not a little more so, than the Medicare premium is. So you're paying that on top of your Medicare premium. And there again, they pay at maximum 80%, but they send you a formulary book every year that tells you everything they will cover, and then another book that tells you everything they won't, which is virtually everything. They don't cover anything. And it's under, you know, like here in Minnesota, under Minnesota statute such and such, we don't have to pay for this. And under Minnesota statute, we don't have to pay for that. So either way, you're getting taken to the cleaners. But we invested in this. Over a lifetime of work, we invested in this. Don't tell me this is some unearned entitlement. This is not welfare. I financed this along with millions of other people. Financed this. And collectively, we kept everybody else going. It's our turn now. And we're still having to invest via these premiums and the co-pays and the stuff they don't pay for. So get off that bandwagon. That just absolutely irks me to no damn end. But anyway, now that I've had my little rant.
Yeah. Well, I find it really interesting about what's going on there in Alaska. You know, we have that they have a very large Alaska Guardianship Association, which we have talked about in the past. And to hear that there's also not just this Social Security money that they can get at, but this extra oil money that is not happening in any other state makes it very interesting. And very interesting that we're seeing this, you know, mega law firm coming together there in Anchorage with, you know, some scrupulous politicians that are becoming the lawyers in this law firm. And even like I read one article, they were saying they were once political foes and now they come together and they're all working together and they're all happy. And, you know, I can only imagine it's just such a, so much money up there, and there must be a lot of elderly there in Anchorage and a lot of people with a lot of money. And now it's just really becoming a big target, and it's very unfortunate.
Yes.
So
yes,
we will keep everyone posted on that.
Yeah. As you uncover the layers of this thing, Kaz, and just like what, you know, you're finding there in Alaska, this mill, it's like a hamster's wheel they are running on, and they move from one position to a law firm to another position, back to another law firm. They get made a judge. They stay a judge for a while. They're back at a law firm, and it just goes around and around and around. And but it's all about money. Every bit of it is about money. And the idea that they are destroying someone else's life to enrich themselves actually makes me want to blow chunks. I just can't get past how these people do what they do, the preying on the elderly, the people with disabilities or people who have a trust fund, and they do this to young people. You know, I mean, they do it. Look at, what's her name, that one singer, Britney.
Oh, Britney Spears.
What is her name?
Britney Spears.
Still under conservatorship, and now her dad has conserved her in several other states. This is how desperate they are to keep control of her money. And she's never going to escape this. And you know, you see that them doing this to high profile people. So when you see people like Cindy up there in Alaska, who has, you know, a little bit of property in pristine Alaskan wilderness, and she's got, you know, this check coming in every month on the gas sales, you know, it just, or annually, I'm sorry, it comes in annually. But, you know, can you imagine out here, like here in Minnesota or there in Wisconsin, if every year we got a check, the population got a check for all the trees they cut down, you know, all the water they stole, you know, my God, we'd all be millionaires. And, of course,
yeah.
We'd probably all be guardianized, too, you know, and the
yeah.
whole state would be guardianized. But,
oh, my goodness.
So it is, yeah. I don't know what to do anymore. We keep talking to these politicians. I've gotten to the point where, and I have several of them call me, you know, and what do you think about them? What do you think about? I think you're disingenuous. I think you're just trying to find out what we know that you could possibly co-opt and put a stopper in. That's what I think. And I've told them that,
yeah.
too. I said, you're not calling because you're genuinely concerned about the issue and have any intentions of correcting the situation. You're calling to find out, what are we doing? What are we planning on doing? What's our game plan? And you want to figure out how to stop us. And so I just don't. And, you know, cause the other thing, too, and we talked about this, if you're going to effect change in this system, it has to be done in your state. You can't
yeah.
go to, you know, we go to the federal level. We go to D.C. for this summit. We, you know, participate in all kinds of things. And I go all over the country when the opportunity presents itself. But it has to happen in the state. It'll take one state throwing this system off and protecting people. One of the things I learned about statute is it's always erected to void the common law, to avoid the common law, and to
yeah.
avoid your constitutional rights. And so anytime you're dealing with statutes, you've already lost. You have already lost because you're not recognized as a human being, and you have no protections because the Constitution does not apply in these tribunals, and you're at a loss. But, you know, there again with these bunch of predators running, cause, can you imagine being an attorney and knowing, you know, we've had some really good ones that have gotten disbarred and sanctioned and prosecuted and everything else. Kathleen Kane is an example.
Yeah.
For doing what they are supposed to do. And regardless of party affiliation or belonging to this closed union shop called the bar, they try to do the right thing and they descend on them and destroy them. And but kid, for those that participate in this, these attorneys who participate, can you imagine being a class of people in this country that is so hated, so despised, disrespected, that most people are reviled by, and you do this every day for a living, and people knowing that you are a corrupt, you're a low-rent individual, that you have no morals, integrity, no character, no empathy, no sympathy. You're simply motivated by greed and narcissism. I don't know. I couldn't do
I
it.
Don't know.
Hey, Marty. Marty,
they sleep with
can
themselves.
I jump in?
Yeah.
Can I
yeah.
chime in?
No, be quiet.
Well, I didn't want to be rude or anything. I wanted to comment with Alaska. Well, it just proves it's another racketeering scam, and it shows that corruption is bipartisan. A few friends of mine and I,
yes.
we recognize that. And yeah, true, it's their love of money that it's definitely the root of evil. As far as, now I'm in Pennsylvania, I'm from Montgomery County, just outside of Philadelphia, and interesting you bring up with the senior stuff as well, because I received a return phone call from something called the Senior Law Center. Now, I contacted
uh-huh.
them for an issue I have, so you would think that they'd be interested in helping. Before I got a word out to the attorney that returned the call, he said, that he read the intake, what they wrote down, and he said, we don't help anybody with a legal issue, they just look at certain things. They say, well, what do you do? Like, why is an attorney even returning a call? And what they're interested in really doing, if you read their list, is basically they do their old money, what we call, a few friends of mine, we call it the money biopsy. You know, they're taking in the, they want to know where are your assets, what are your assets, and then they'll be happy to help you prepare anything, if you have anything to do with preparing with things that involve trust or probate, any way that they can find to access your assets. And that's really what they're about.
Yes.
They don't want to help you. They just want to help you if they can help them. They want to help themselves is what they want to do to get their money. And it's disgusting. And they're funded by the state. It's the state.
See, we've had law firms here. Yes, we have law firms here that send out these things about come have dinner with us and let us show you how to avoid conservatorship and guardianship. But before you go in and have the dinner, you have to fill out a sheet that tells all of your assets where they're at, how much they're worth, who has access to them, or you can't go in and enjoy their free meal and their spiel. You've just been databased.
I'll write zero on everything and go eat my free meal live at my name. I'll take advantage of them.
That's what I did when I went to the one to see what it was about. And that young lady, I find out was a young attorney, was standing at the door. And she says, ma'am, you have to fill out this form before you go in. And I said, what is it? She said, well, we just like to know that you're a potential client and you're someone we actually can do some work for. And that's all it's for. Well, what it was listing out all your property and any jewelry you had and anything else you had that was worth, you know. And so it says, she said, list anything of value that you have that would be included in your estate. So I put down both my grandkids, my dog, and my resin chickens. I had a collection of those, beautiful, beautiful things. And she said, what is this? I said, you said put down what I had that was of value. That's it. And she goes, are you being – and I said, I'm going to go in and eat now. I said, from what I hear, they're having steak. And I shot past her and went in. But this is the thing is, see, when they're selling you this thing on guardianship, let us help you avoid, they're operating in fraud. And the reason they're operating in fraud is they know that those papers they're going to charge you for are fraudulent in the sense that they will be discarded. This is no protection. All you've done is listed out your assets and done their work for them so that when you go into that probate tribunal and the first thing that judge or hearing examiner in there says is, have all of the assets been marshaled? You just gave them a complete list. They got it all. No research needed. Don't do these things. So to me, this is fraud because they know that a hearing examiner will cast off any wills, trusts, DOAs or DPOAs, DOA, dead on arrival. They will cast all of these off and hand all of your possessions and your identity over to that guardian. So this is a fraud, and if I was people, I would sue these attorneys over that if you could get away with suing them, but of course they have immunity. They have immunity.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Yes, we have immunity. And we can be as corrupt as we want. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Shenanigans.
They take an inventory. They want an inventory of all your assets. And
yes.
So I talked to Mr. Shenanigans, and I said, hey, we're going to go back to the at-holes, because, the at-holes have been getting a little bit of a break, and they aren't getting their focus that they deserve. So I said, Mr. Shenanigans, do you have anything for me? And he gave me the story of Flores, and I just sent it to you. There's a YouTube video with all the documents loaded up. And Marty, I just sent it to you. I don't know that you were able to, I did it like 5 minutes before went on air. And I don't know that you were able to put that on there, but maybe after the show you could put the link out so that all the listeners can go and see the documents for themselves. But it has to do with, so the story is Florence, and she lived in a house with her daughter and her grandson. And then attorney Robert Slutsky, who's just one of the married members of the Attholes, he also works for Adult Protective Services, came along and he came along and Florence needed a guardian and Florence had a trust and the daughter was named on the trust, but Atholl Judge Lois Murphy decided that that shouldn't be. And even in the small print, it said that it couldn't even change, even if there was a guardian. But they don't even care about that stuff. So I talked to so many people who, you know, they'll hear my story. They'll tell us, I'll tell the story about Harvey or whatever. They're like, well, that won't happen to me. You know, we've got all of our paperwork, our trust and everything. And I just want to laugh. I'm like, that means nothing because they'll just override it. And here's another example.
Yes.
You know, Florence paid an attorney to write up a trust, and the judge overruled it. And then it gets even better, or worse, actually. They have to change all the medications, switch all the doctors. Florence is now taken out of her home, thrown into some sort of a nursing home that's charging $9,000 a month. And then the home that her daughter and her grandson is, they have to go and evict Florence's family out of the home so that they can sell it, and the trust account. So anyway, 2 years later, from the day this started till the day that Florence passed away, only 2 years goes by. And in that trust, they took $333,593 gone.
Oh, my God.
In 2 years. And you will have all the documents that you can load up so that everyone listening can hear. This is what happens in Montgomery County. And this is happening in other counties around the country. Like, your trust means nothing. Your will means nothing. Your power of attorneys mean nothing. And as long as we continue to sit back and act like a bunch of sheeple and allow this to continue to happen, you don't know that you listening, that you're not going to be next or your family's not going to be next. Like, this is how it's going down. Any document, and you've already paid the attorney to write your trust and your wills, and you probably paid him $1,000, and it's not even worth anything because the judge has just overrided it. None of it's even, it's not worth it.
They're selling a fraud that they know to be a fraud. And they're selling it to you and telling you and misrepresenting it and telling you it's protection. And, you know, once you have this in place, you're safe and nothing could be further from the truth. And they know it when they sell it to you. It's not like they were taken by surprise. They know exactly how this is good. They know that what they wrote isn't worth the paper it was written on.
And by the way, Marty and Cos, there's a lot of lawyers. They'll actually advertise that they'll do a will for you for free because they know down the road they expect to come in at a later date when you pass. And they have people who look at the obituaries every day, like in their office. They keep track of stuff. And they look for if anyone who they did a free will for, or maybe they'll do a will for $25. Then they go after it and, you know, try to get a hold of it through probate or clean it out or any other way they can. And, well, I'll tell you, I know there are some people who do not have wills at all, and what they do is they just beneficiary all of their assets to whoever they choose. So they put, let's say it's your child, and you want to leave to your child. If you have accounts, they just put their child's name, you know, on the account so that it becomes their account if they pass away. You know, with a house, it's difficult, you know, unless you deed your house over to your child. And lots of seniors don't want to do that. Who would feel comfortable, you know, it's really a hard thing to do as well. You know, you're taking a chance there. But I see all this stuff only to benefit the legal system, you know. That's it.
Right.
They just,
well, the thing is, a lot of this, even when you've got this set up to transfer upon death and that type of thing, even if you, like, title the house over into your children's name or however you do this to try to avoid these people, several states like Arizona, I believe Nevada is one of them also, But several states now have, and New Mexico is also, they can look back 3 or 5 years and they do a search to find out if anything's been traded or sold or bought or anything else. And if they find anything, then that tribunal demands that it be brought back and given back to the estate because it belongs to the guardian. And it's like when they determine somebody to be incapacitated, as they call it now. Many states are now allowing them to go back 12 years and say, well, if you were incapacitated today, you must have been 12 years ago. So these documents are no good. And no matter which way you go, no matter how you try to do this, the fact is the only people obeying the law are you. The people that are supposed to be enforcing the law and walking a tight line are the ones breaking it and abusing it and getting away with it.
Yeah. Well, and I feel now it is time to kind of go into who was about to be our hero. We had the top law enforcement for the state of Pennsylvania, Kathleen Kane. She ran on the Democratic ticket. She's the first female attorney general. Everyone loved her. She looks like a supermodel. She's so beautiful. She's a mother of, I believe they were like elementary school age children. She was an attorney, and she just went after everyone. And I'm just going to do quick my story of how we know that Kathleen King was helping us in our story. And then Elaine, who we met at the Whistleblower Summit, which was such a wonderful thing to make the connection. Elaine really knows a lot because she lives right there in Montgomery County and in Pennsylvania, and this story is a big story out there. I know some of it just because Kathleen King was my hero. So we go to court. It's July 8th. We go to court, and this is when the final, corruption goes down, and Judge Ott decides that it doesn't matter that Harvey Witt is being chemically restrained. And, it was this eight-hour court hearing that I sat on the stand for pretty much the whole thing. I was demonized. You should know, Marty, I'm a terrible person. I shouldn't even be a mother. Judge Ott said that. I shouldn't even be a mother. Mm-hmm, that's how terrible of a person I am. Go ask my kids how they think about it. And they would tell you that I was a good mom. But anyway, I was just such a terrible person. I should not ever have even been a mother. And I felt, when he said that, I felt that my children were over 18 at the time. I felt like had I been a resident of Montgomery County, my kids would have been targeted by that comment. Felt that. But anyway, I'm just a terrible person. So Harvey's gets guardianized and the family's terrible and we're all terrible. And at that point we had figured out, because before this hearing was going on, I hadn't found NASGA yet, and we were trying to figure out how do we fight this, and we had started a care plan, and it was a social worker here in Wisconsin that had told me, oh, this is chemical restraint that they're doing. If this was Wisconsin, there would be a criminal investigation going on, which makes me think that Dane County is still very, I have not heard of any stories in Dane County. And the fact that a social worker gave me such good advice and then also gave me the advice to go and talk to Tammy Baldwin, who's the senator here for Wisconsin, which makes me think there's really not a lot of criminal activity in Dane County. Which makes me happy, and that's where I live right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, and I actually met a judge in Dane County about a year ago, and that was a positive thing, and I even had – but anyway, that's a side note. So they rotate judges here in Dane County. It's really hard for them to do these criminal rackets, and that would be a good thing around the country if you would rotate judges. But anyway, back to this. Mm-hmm. So we're finding out – we think that there's some kind of a – bad thing going on. And Tammy Baldwin's office tells us, you need to figure out how to make this federal, because we're in Wisconsin, Harvey's in Pennsylvania, she can't help us, but we can figure out how to make it federal. So we filed a Medicare fraud, and it was actually my son Sam who was at the time in high school. It's like, well, what about this? So we filed Medicare fraud, and as it was going through the channels, it had kicked back into Kathleen Kane's office. We get a phone call just a couple days after this hearing from Kathleen Kane's office wanting to know the investigation. Now, it was just the culmination of the perfect storm. She didn't know that this hearing was going on and this and that. But, I mean, we
right.
were so devastated by how it had gone down and basically realizing now this is really bad. And then at this point, we're also finding NASDA and learning, like, oh, this is kind of a scam. Anyway, they opened up an investigation at the Attorney General's office. And when we had our own email address, so when you put in complaints to like the FBI or the Attorney General office, you know that someone's telling you the truth, because a lot of people just run their mouth, oh, I went to the FBI. Oh, okay, that's nice.
Yeah.
You will have an email address that will only be linked to your case, and it will be this email. So I can only imagine that they have all these servers or all these email addresses, and they just checking not just their email address, but seeing, and you know, all these different things coming in from like probably thousands of different email addresses, and each one is for one specific case. So what we were told is that when an email bounces back to us, you know the case is closed. We then started calling it the Great Abyss. So we would just start sending documents over into the Attorney General office, Kathleen Kane, and we had our own, it wasn't her, but it was another name, I'm not going to say the name on the air, of the person who we were working with. So then we know that there was a wellness check that was done on Harvey, because Deb Clock was really suspicious and wondering who were these visitors that came to see Harvey. And I still have the emails where she sent, and you know, she was fishing, like, oh, and some men in suits, they came. Well, we knew that was the Attorney General office that went to check on Harvey. And we knew that mm-hmm. Kathleen Kane was investigating all this. And meanwhile, I mean, at this point, she's our hero. She's investigating Montgomery County. She's investigating everything that we told her that Judge Ott did. And we had at the time about 3,000 pages of documents, if you include all the medical records that we had. We handed all that over to the Attorney General office. As time has gone by, we have found out that other victims of the Ott holes had as well handed over everything to the Attorney General office. She knew that there was something going on there. She also, as you're going to find out from Elaine, you're going to hear what else she knew. This woman was trying to do the best that she could do. I believe that she's a compassionate woman, she's a mother, and she took her job serious, and she cared about humans, she cared about her fellow mankind, because when you hear the different investigations that she uncovered, you're going to know. She was not in that job to play the game, to make a bunch of money for political favors.
Right.
She truly was there to do the right thing. And as she's investigating Montgomery County and coming down on what would be, I mean, probably would be one of the biggest stories in the country if anyone ever wrote it, she is uncovering it. And as you'll see, it was Montgomery County who brought corruption charges up against her. She ends up going to jail, and then you have a choice for the new Attorney General. So no one's running against her because she got taken out. You had a Democrat from Montgomery County, or you had a Republican from Montgomery County that you got to choose from in the general election. So the people of Pennsylvania got to choose from one or another person from Montgomery County. They give you some smoke and mirrors. Here's one that's a Democrat, and here's one that's a Republican. And now they have Josh Shapiro, and he's from Montgomery County, so he's going to protect his county. But anyway, Elaine, why don't you segue into all the things that Kathleen Kane uncovered? We have the 300 priests, we have Porngate, we have the Jerry Sandusky, we have that one sheriff who was selling all these guns. I mean, there's just so much. And how many people lost their jobs because of what Kathleen Kane did? So, Elaine, take it away.
Yeah. Well, sure. Well, yeah, first of all, it's interesting how the former commissioner of Montgomery County, Josh Shapiro, just happened to become the attorney general while they, you know, squeezed out Kathleen Kane. And by the way, there was another former commissioner from Montgomery County who happened to be working right under Kathleen Kane when they basically took away her power as Attorney General, but she had not yet resigned. She wasn't yet forced out. I don't know. I don't want to say the names of everybody. You know, I don't know what liabilities are here. But in any event, yeah, so it's interesting that Kathleen Kane, I mean, she lived up in Scranton, northeast Pennsylvania, a couple of hours away. Why she was prosecuted by Montgomery County, the trial was held in Montgomery County. The capital of Pennsylvania is Harrisburg, so why in the world was she tried in Montgomery County? I'm sure if they were asked, they being the court system, they'd come up with some sort of, you know, excuse or reason. But it's interesting that they prosecuted her for perjury when I have never heard of any other attorney. Most people that I know of who had to deal with the court system, we don't even know of any litigants who are held or, you know, prosecuted for perjury. And as far as I'm being told, that this something called the False Statements Accountability Act of 1996, which went in during the Clinton era or administration, it basically relieved lawyers from liability when they lie in the courtroom and or on, you know, things that they file, pleadings and so forth. So that's really curious how they really went to town on her for perjury. Well, anyway, some of the things I know that she was the Penn State scandal, where there was a football coach from Penn State, Jerry Sandusky. He had been molesting boys for many, many years. There was a huge cover-up, and that was just an awful scandal. I mean, what's really terrible is many of these scandals, people are running to the press. They're going to the FBI, police, local police, state police, private attorneys, and it's brushed under the rug. It's all censored by the press, and every now and then you'll get some reporter who leaks it. And, of course, we all know about, remember, Gretchen Hammond, you know, she did a remarkable job,
yeah.
But they're trying to continue to censor that. Nobody wants to put it out there. Okay, so then you have, I know that there was a mayor of Harrisburg, I think during Kathleen Kane's time, who had been charged with, I think, 499 counts of corruption. That's just obscene. And then there was while she was investigating, I believe, the pedophile priest from the church, that's when she stumbled upon the porn gate, which was an outrage.
Yes.
Because that was like a whole network. The judges, they were sending pornographic emails on government computers during work hours. It wasn't just the judges among the judges. They were sending it to all their buddies. It doesn't have to be a man. You know, it could be. It could have been somebody in the FBI building. It could have been somebody at the Attorney General office. It could have been a secretary working for a particular law firm, or anybody, you know, in any contacts they had. And I'll tell you, I never got one of those emails, so I guess they had to have been their buddies. You know, it was to their private little crowd of people. And well, and of course, and I'm sure I cannot. I'm just saying my opinion. I believe it was during their course of the workday when they wanted to get something done. Probably, I'm guessing, maybe they want something done for them, you know, that you shouldn't normally be doing, you know, maybe some favor or something, and they're contacting somebody in another office. And then during that course of that communication, passing those emails away as well. And, you know, that was horrible, but what's really terrible is instead of the judiciary and all those folks getting in trouble for it, they attacked her. She was the state's attorney to deal with crime, and she got punished for doing her job. It is so horrible what, you know, what they've done to her. They took her down, and she went to so many top attorneys, and I spoke with several of them. They were all big attorneys, you know, a former attorney for former President Clinton. She had that top attorney up in New York. She went all over. And, you know, when something is fixed, when you are a target, you can. It doesn't matter who you go to. It's like God can't help you. Nobody can help you. It's really
Well, you
sad.
Know, when I was seeing this, like, I remember Lanny Davis and, like, Bruce Castor, I was sending them all Harvey's files, and I was telling them, like, hey, I know you're representing Kevin Payne. I know, like, this is what's going on in Montgomery County. Like, I was sending, I'm like, I know this woman is innocent. I know what they're doing. And it just never came out. I mean, we were all trying to help her.
Mm-hmm. They're really interested in the big fat paycheck. And if you can't give them a huge paycheck, you know, they won't. She went and hired on behalf of her office, a former attorney general from the state of Maryland who had been, I don't know where he is right now, but he was with a firm down in the D.C., Washington, D.C. area, a huge firm, and he was supposed to be able to come in as an objective person, and he paid money from the taxpayers. It was the taxpayers who were paying for it. He was supposed to do an investigation to look into things, and at the end of it, he comes up with some report. And they in Pennsylvania, they basically covered up and protected practically everyone. There was about 13 judges that had excessive, all sorts of horrible, horrible emails that were being passed. But there was hundreds of people involved with those emails as well, who was of a lesser extent. You know, it could have been all sorts of people from different offices. And they covered everybody up, protected them. Nothing happened to any of them, and all they did was take her down. She went to prison for about 8 months, but before they let her out of prison, and I think she was let out July 31st, just, before they let her out, you know, in fact, I believe it could have been in the spring, they made sure they took her license so she could never practice again. It's what they do, they being the system.
Yep.
They make sure they take your license so you can practice. And it's terrible. And I will point out, by the way, you know, there are, I don't know that I should use the names, but there's certain mobsters, I'll call them. I'm going to use the name mobsters, who even tried to donate money to her campaign. She returned it. She would not even accept it. Because, you know, everybody knows what that means. You know, you donate and you're getting favors in return. And she wouldn't do that. She returned it. And, you know, I'll tell you also with that priest problem with the archdiocese, there was this one particular family, the father, and I'm not sure, he may have passed away by now. He was a Supreme Court justice maybe, and then his son may very well still be the district attorney up in like Allegheny County. And I know one of the brothers was part owner to the Kitty prison, but at least two of those family members from that family, they were on the board of the archdiocese. They knew about all that pedophile stuff going on with the priest and did nothing while people continued to complain and complain and complain. And, you know, one of the brothers, he's a district attorney. And they did nothing. And also what I heard, and that now I don't, you know, I hope I have this correct now, but it was my understanding that this Josh Shapiro, who's currently the attorney general, I understand, and I could have it wrong, but he worked at a law firm that knew about all of this as well. And this is prior to him becoming Attorney General. But there's a lot of people, a lot of firms, the law firms knew about it. And then Josh Shapiro came out on TV, I think it was last summer, acting as if he discovered this, and he's turning it, bringing it to the news when his firm was protecting.
Yeah.
I think they were the defense counsel for these, some, or I don't know if it's one or some of these priests. So,
like 300 of them were charged, like 300
yeah.
priests. It's not just one
yeah.
or two. I had read an article, I believe it was in the Huffington Post, and they actually were filming child pornography in the rectory. It's disgusting.
Yes.
But this was the kind of criminal that Kathleen Kane went after because she was a moral woman with integrity, and this disgusted her. And I think that she came at it hard enough so that they couldn't cover it up. And
yeah.
for those things, we're grateful to her.
Yes. And, you know, I contacted her office. She sent somebody from her office. I won't give the name out. A director to meet with me who drove a couple hours to come down to meet with me. And I don't even want to say what they had told me. I mean, some of the stuff is frightening. I had two people with me, and the corruption is so bad. You know, people worry for their life when they hear some things going on. But I sent records to that former attorney general. He put everything into a password connected to protect it, like a flash drive or something, sent it back to her director, and they were supposed to turn stuff over to the FBI. And I'm wondering, when is that going to happen? And I was not the only one. There was a handful of other people who had done the same thing. Because when you have a case that's going on, you know, when you have a case that is so extensive, it's not just like you didn't get a fair shake. There's tons of crime being committed. And that's what I turned over. So apparently there was lots and lots of crime being committed, and they must have come in, the other, you know, whoever's going after King, and they weren't letting anything leave her office to go to the FBI. So I don't know what happened with all those records. It's shameful.
Wow.
And they wouldn't release it to the – they would not release the findings, the full report, to – the news press regarding the porn gate, and that was paid. They were trying to cover it up, saying attorney-client privilege or something to that extent. It was paid by the taxpayers. It was. It should have been fully transparent. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Hello?
Oh,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Keep going, Elaine.
I'm here.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the other thing, the other story that's out of Montgomery County, when we're talking about Judge Stanley Ott, there was a whole documentary. It's called The Art of the Steal, and it's the Barnes Foundation. And they had Judge Ott reinterpret this guy's will, and he reinterpreted the will and took a $25 billion, with a B, billion-dollar art collection that was in this private Barnes Foundation and decided that, he really wanted to leave that art collection to the city of Philadelphia. I watched the documentary. Yeah.
It was 5 minutes. It was 5 minutes from my house, the original collection, 5 minutes from my house. Yes, and they moved it into Philadelphia.
And they stole it, and they had, and it was Judge Ott who did the deal. Oh, let me reinterpret this will. And when, Elaine, was that from like the 1970s or something, that it had been in a private foundation since like the 1970s, and then how many decades later Judge Ott reinterprets a will?
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're protecting him, I'm sure. He gave you $25 billion with a B, billion-dollar art collection, and handed it over to the city of Philadelphia and took it from this private collection, and not what the guy who owned it in the first place had intended it to have happened. It was a great documentary. Yeah. And when I had learned that it was Judge Ott, and that was the same judge that I was dealing with, I was horrified. I was like, oh my gosh, this is the same judge.
And he moved it out of
He's
our county.
He's done some good deals.
Yeah, he moved it right. He moved it out of Montgomery County, which is just outside of Philadelphia. Why would a Montgomery County judge move something of value outside of the county? And he basically, you know what he did? He basically, you know, sold it off to the city of Philadelphia, you know, for there must have been some kind of lucrative deal that was going on. Why would anyone else give assets in your, you know?
And then the city of Philadelphia got a big federal grant to build the museum.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
there
then, yeah, so he has to be protected because you cannot have this judge be Judge Ott of the Attholes. You cannot take that judge down when he did that good of a favor for these politicians. And now I read that, and Judge Ott is now working for a private law firm. Isn't that interesting?
Oh.
Just like they do in Alaska. Just like in Alaska. And he's on the board for the Pennsylvania State Bar. He's just such an upstanding judge. Did they ever Google him? Because we've done enough that when you Google him, everything that he's done in guardianship that is bad is the first thing that comes up. And we are very happy about that. All of us working together. When you Google his name, you're not finding all these glowing things. This is what you find. And this is this upstanding judge that now gets to sit on their board.
Well, you know what we all say, everyone who's been I'm going to call us a victim of the court, we say, follow the money trail, because that's where you see it. And then when they have some new building that's going to be built, then you look at all the deals being made there, all the kickbacks to get the contracts and so forth, and there you have another big money-generating item there. So there you have it. what they're doing is passing assets around, so they skim some for themselves and pass the assets. And this is the very same thing that's going across the board. I think it doesn't matter which subject matter it is. You know, my issue was with the family court. They strip your assets, and you know they're redistributing things, and it's horrible. It's just awful what's going on. There's people in the guardianship matter. People, they're losing their lives, not just their assets, their lives. And then in family court, people are losing children. They're taking your quality of life away. And you know some of these things. These are, like, really fundamental things in life. You know, when you're dealing with a third party in some kind of civil action, it's very different. You're talking about a separate party. When you're dealing about your own assets, so with guardianship, it's your own money. And with family court, it's your own money, your own children. And the court comes in, and, you know, you're a commodity to them. So
yes. Yeah. We've been monetized, you know, across the board. We have been monetized, and this is what I've tried to get across to people. Every bill that comes out, whether it's state or federal, dealing with family court or guardianship or whatever, goes first to the Energy and Commerce Committee. You're not energy, so you must be in commerce, and you are a commodity. From there, it gets handed down to these subcommittees, like on health and human aging and all of this stuff. It gets handed down to lower committees that are under the commerce, and all of these committees, regardless of what their title is, are all engaged in commerce. They are all based on commerce. And you are in commerce. This is why you go to a tribunal instead of a court of law. Because you are in commerce, and girls, just an idea. What could do you think would be an appropriate way to deal with this system? What do you think should be done?
There's a lot of people. I'm not sure how to handle guardianship. I'm not professional enough in that, I guess. But I could tell you this much: with the family court matter, there's a lot of people who think it has no business, and maybe it's true for the guardianship as well. It has no business being in a court. They make it an adverse situation. I suppose the same
yes.
is true with guardianship.
Yes.
Why are you putting a person with their own assets, making it, whenever you go into a court, you're dealing with it, you're making it an adverse situation, a fight amongst
yes.
two parties. Why should, you know,
mm-hmm.
so there's been talk of making it, like, I don't know, maybe administrative or in some simplified form for the family court, and I'm thinking maybe something similar with the guardianship. Maybe Kaz has more ideas with that because she dealt with that level of the court.
Mm-hmm. There was a state once, I can't remember what state it was, and I wish I could because it was years ago. Anyway, the most money that a guardian could make in a month, the absolute most money that a guardian could make in a month was $600. That's it.
Yeah.
So when you're seeing, we've, Harvey's bills, oh my goodness, we've had those up all over. I mean, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds, I believe his, that one court hearing that I told you about, the 8-hour court hearing, that was $180,000 in, because there was more attorneys in that room than in the O.J. Simpson trial. There was 8 attorneys, and they all had to be paid out of Harvey Whitney's estate. It was $180,000 that he had to pay all those attorneys for that one hearing that basically isolated him from his family, allowed him the continued medical or the chemical restraint that he was going through. It was just disgusting. So if the most that in even an attorney, they need to cap the attorney too, $600 a month. And then it won't be so lucrative. If you take away that incentive, I think then people wouldn't want to do it. But I see that
yeah.
being a far ways away. You know, the one thing that I would say, everyone wants a female president, the first female president. I think it needs to be Kathleen Kane. I think she would
yeah.
just go in there. That's
yeah.
the solution. She would go in there and she would do the right thing. And it's so sad for the American people and for the people of Pennsylvania that this was done to her. And I can only hope she's laying low right now. She's going to raise her family because she's a devoted mother. And I hope that we haven't heard the last of her and that she's going to come back and she's going to tell it. And I hope that enough people will come to realize what was done to her.
I think her boy, I thought she had two boys. I think they're like, they're teenagers. Maybe one may have graduated high school by now. So they have like aged up a little bit. But, you know, it's a shame because I wish she would, you know, I wish she had an opportunity to hear this program and know that there's really, you know, some people out there who root for her. And it's not just the three of us. I could tell you that. There's my entire
yeah.
network of people. We all
yeah.
know it. We all talk amongst each other, but what are we going to do? We're victims of the
yeah.
same
yeah.
gangsters. That's what I
well,
can call them,
yes.
gangsters.
Yes.
And I believe that
and
when you're dealing with this much – yeah, and when you're dealing with this much corruption, they not only just attack your money and thing, I do believe they will attack your life and the life of your loved ones, and they wouldn't think twice about taking someone out, and I could tell stories about that too on this show. There is a lot of speculation that kind of stuff is done, and why not threaten her in that way to really shut her up? And unfortunately, I believe
yeah.
that is done. It wouldn't shock me.
Well,
yes.
Would it shock you, Elaine? Yeah.
Since you brought that up, I wasn't about to bring it up, but since you did, when I went
yeah.
to her office, not to her in person, not with her director, they tried to pursue something for me that was, it's absolute corruption, tampering with computer system with the government. And, you know, it had to do with defraud. You know, Montgomery County defrauding the U.S. government, and I brought these records because it involved my case. They were using my case to defraud the government. And meantime, when I met with the director, and I had two people with me as witnesses, the director told me about the person who she took my stuff to. I'm not going to even say the office. The next day, shot himself in the head. And, you know,
oh my God.
I thought, well, yes, that's and when I looked up the obituary for this person, this is not anyone who lived near me. It didn't even say it was a suicide or anything. It just said he died suddenly. And I have the person's name. I'm just not going to say it on the, you know, over there here. But I thought, and then the director took this stuff in my case to another person at that same division now, and about a month later or so, and that person refused to even pursue anything. They said they're not going to pursue anything. So, you know, I'd have to wonder, I'll always wonder the circumstances around that person. Was it a coincidence? Did somebody, that person going to look into something and something happened to the person? Was the person in up to their eyeballs doing it and did, you know, pull the trigger themselves? I'll never know. It just seemed that it was quite a coincidence that someone is shot in the head the day after all this information is, you know, and I'll never know, you know. I'll just have to always wonder, but, you know.
I have a story while we're talking about this, and it's just coming to mind. We were looking for an attorney back when before we were going to court, and one thing that I did was I went through the list of the disbarred attorneys that were on that Montgomery County list, and it's really interesting. I mean, I'm really good at stalking, and you just sit there in front of the computer for hours, and you just look up everything, and you start Googling every name of the person that was disbarred, because I had started to realize if Montgomery County Bar Association is going to say that you did something bad, you probably did something good. So I find this woman, and she's saying, and I'm finding all the evidence, and I'm reading the file and everything, and she's saying that these judges are corrupt and they're running, you know, they're all inclusion and everything. So they paint her as a crazy lady. They disbar her for 5 years. And I'm looking at the date going, oh, you know what, 5 years are up. And I'm telling my sister, like, I think I might have found an attorney we need to hire. So I start Googling the lady's name, and I find an obituary. She was in her early 60s, and she's dead. And you know what? It makes me wonder, what's going on?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know.
Exactly.
I mean, what you said is kind of it. You're on the mark, and that's why so many attorneys, they will just turn your wonder, well, I have a great case. I can pay you. Why are you turning this down? You know, and they know, the attorneys know that most of them will not say it. They won't say it to you, or they won't say it. They keep it quiet, but they really know the way it works, you know. You don't step on their toe. And the funny thing is, well, the ironic, I should say, is that if you look at the disciplinary rules, they're required to report another attorney or a judge when there's something illegal or corrupt, something like that going on. Yet then they have their own little private rules. If you blow the whistle, you're finished. You're cooked.
Yeah.
It's
they call it, you know, career suicide is what they call it. So,
I call it professional cannibalism. They turn around and eat their own. They absolutely do. This is what they're doing to Lisa Belanger out there in Boston. She filed those two RICO cases, one in 2015 and one in 2017, that she took the information directly from public records and showed a clear pattern of racketeering between these same attorneys, the same guardians, the same judges, this time after they're running this mill. And the judge wouldn't even read it, wouldn't even acknowledge the fact that it was a RICO motion. And basically said that, there were too many words. She couldn't be expected to read that. It was too many words, and some of them was really big words, too, and she's just a girl. What do you expect her to do? And, and I wrote that judge. Her name was Sally something, and I wrote her and told her, I said, by your own admission, you're not competent. You need to resign and recuse yourself, step down off the bench. And she never responded. I don't know why. And but they're doing that to Lisa now. They're trying to prosecute her, claiming on a case that she had that she had broken the law somehow. And, of course, when you read the brief on this, it's so haphazard and such a obvious setup, you know, that it just but this is what they do, and this is the penalty for opening your mouth and saying, wait a minute, you guys are a bunch of damn crooks and thieves, mm-hmm. you know. And so this is what they, this is why we can't get attorneys. I mean, for God's sake, how many of them have we seen get disbarred, get put out of business, and then they plant fake articles about them all over the net? And they don't have any problem then with fake news. It's only fake news if you out them for what they're doing. Then all of a sudden they have a big problem. That's fake news and it's misinformation, and you are a national security threat because you're a conspiracy theorist. There's a difference between someone who outs a conspiracy that's ongoing and someone who invents things with no basis in evidence. We have mountains of evidence of these rackets running. And yet, we just can't seem to get anything done. Why,
right,
it's not enough, no matter what you got.
Yes, when you have records that provide, you know, actual records, it can't be argued. But by the way, one of the other things in Pennsylvania I could tell you they do is they have what they call rules. You have your legislative laws, which is laws are supposed to be by your legislators. You got your state legislators and your federal legislators. Okay, but in Pennsylvania, and I guess it's the same all over, but I don't know, they got the judges making rules. Now, it seems to me that that's quite a conflict, that the judges are supposed to listen. They're just supposed to be a fact finder and apply the legislative laws. But instead, they're writing their own laws. And in Pennsylvania, I don't remember the year. It could have been 20 something years ago, maybe, they changed a lot of the laws, the language, where normally it would say something like something shall occur, or this shall. They changed it from shall to may, which basically gave judicial discretion. So they can slant it any way they want. A guardian shall be appointed, or a guardian may be appointed. It gives the judge discretion. You may give child support. You shall give child. You know, they change the language that gives judges all this discretion. And I believe it was. Go ahead.
Well, the word now is must. The word is must. The Supreme Court said that the word may meant you could or you couldn't, whatever you decided to do. So people were using the word shall and said it was a command statement. You shall do this. But the Supreme Court came back again and said, well, that means you shall, you know, if you think it's the right thing to do. And it doesn't really mean it's a command. It just means it's something that is available to you if you should need to use it. So the word now has to be must. That's a direct command. You must do this. So the words shall and may have been reinterpreted to mean, if you want to, go ahead. If you don't, don't. And you have to have the word must in there, you know. But you're right. They're making law from the bench. And the legislatures are not challenging it. It's one thing to make rules for how the court will operate. But when
procedure,
you make rules that are in effect, are in effect actual lawmaking, so that, you know, you can't bring the actual common law into that court because the court said, well, we have our own rules. Now, when it comes to the judiciary, the only part of the judiciary, what we euphemistically call the judiciary, that is a part of the federal government, part of the three branches, is SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States. That's who they're talking about in the judiciary. When they talk about it in reference of, you know, this being the Supreme Court and the third branch of government, your state judicial system is not included in that. Now, also federal courts come under that because they're all under the direction of the Supreme Court. And your state courts are not part of the judiciary, not in the sense of government and being a branch of government. And they're all set up as closed union shops. They're issuing what they call a license, which is nothing more than a bar union dues card, and saying if you don't pay dues and you don't have this card, then you can't work. And we need to get right-to-work laws for attorneys that don't want to be in the bar association. And, you know, I mean, how many times do we see people go into court into one of these tribunals and the judge ordered them to hire an attorney. They don't have any right to do that. That'd be like an electrician coming into my house and ordering me to hire a plumber he knows, whether I need a plumber or I don't. They have no business doing that. That's a conflict of interest. They're part of the same bar association. They're a member of it that person they're telling you you must hire belongs to. This is self-generating business. This isn't supposed to happen. And if you go back to the Constitution, it doesn't say anything about legal representation. You have a right to counsel. It says nothing about you have to hire one of these bar union members. Nothing.
But
so,
if you don't have a member representing you there, then they act as if you are invisible. All of your filers go into a separate.
Yep.
Here's the pro se, you know, the self filers, and then here's the members filers. You do not even count.
Yep.
And I know too many people. It's the same thing.
Yes.
And the funny thing, the interesting thing is that the people, a lot of these people who file pro se, their stuff, they have outstanding work. The lawyers, you wonder, where did they go? To clam school? Because half of them don't even know what they're doing.
Right.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, a lot of pro se people.
I think that's one of the biggest problems they have with the net. What they thought everybody was going to do on the net was what Facebook was for a long time. You know, I had sausage and eggs for breakfast, and today I'm going to a party, and tomorrow I'm going to the beach, and look at, don't I look cute in this, and type amen if you love God, and it was all of this stupid crap. And they never anticipated. They thought we were so, you know, dulled down and dim-witted that nobody would ever look into the law. So they felt perfectly safe, or into legislation, or into anything. They felt perfectly safe in making all of this stuff available on the net, all these legal sites and the code and statutes and all that, because they thought nobody's going to look at it anyway. But this way we can say everything's out there. You know, you had to have known because we published it. And what they found out was that the most trafficked sites on the net are looking at legislation, they're looking at law, and this wasn't supposed to happen. People know more today about the law than they ever knew 25 years ago. It was a system of mysteries, it truly was, but now people are educating themselves, and it's driving these people nuts, because like you say, Elaine, many of these pro se people come into court, and they are far better educated in what the law actually is and what should be abided by than those attorneys standing over there getting a gazillion dollars an hour for doing nothing.
And you know, I know someone who, she actually has, when she had she has something before the court now, and she has an argument between the court with the language. They're saying, it's one of those stupid little things where they're saying you may or shall, that kind of type of thing. But in any event, this woman actually got the transcript from Congress when they were here voting in the middle of the night. She has the transcript to back her up. So when when the Pennsylvania court is telling her, and she said it to me, she goes, here's the transcript. She actually got a transcript. Like when you look at some of these laws, you know, they got all kinds of little wording and numbers at the very bottom of their pages. Who knows what that is? Well, some of them things are directions. That is the direction where to find and how you look things up, where it came from, you know, how was this derived.
Yes.
And she actually has the transcript saying what their intention was. And I can't wait to see the outcome of her most recent pleading when they try to, you know, shoot her down. You know, so to speak.
Well, that's what I say.
That sounds like Mary Bush. That sounds like Mary Bush. She is just amateur lawyer. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And she's done. And a lot of these people have become very skilled at writing briefs and motions.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, what they write is far more intelligent and intelligible than what is coming from these law firms. Basically, law, the language of law, is a bunch of smoke and mirrors. It's a bunch of trickery. I have several copies of Black's Law here spanning about 20 years. And if you look at how things have been redefined as these courts make law from the bench, and the redefining of phrases and terms, and then you see all this archaic language in there, all this Latin, you know, honest God, some of the in abonito, meaning from the beginning. Why don't you just say from the beginning? You know, we speak English, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. And some,
you know,
of
but all of this
by, and some of
yeah.
these attorneys, by the way, they'll go right into a courtroom and lie and just make up a law that doesn't exist.
Yes.
I've been in a courtroom a few times, and somebody was a lawyer sitting in the courtroom, someone I know, and they were Googling the stuff as the opposing counsel was reading all, making statements to a judge. And when we left, this attorney said to me, you know, they just made that up. There is nothing. And the judge is entering orders. The judge was entering orders based on made-up laws that the opposing counsel was saying. The opposing is just making stuff up. Oh, yeah.
Was that Judge Ott?
It was not. Yeah. It was another one. Another one who's all over, who much has been complained about. And, you know, yeah, I'll tell you privately if you like.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they all know each other.
Yeah.
They all know
yes.
each other.
Yeah.
Wow.
It just, I think in order for this to be corrected on any level is to shut down these tribunals and bring these cases back into a state court where you have to follow the rules of evidence, the code of civil procedure, because in a tribunal, you don't have to follow any of those things. That's why these guardians are able to stand up there with their attorneys and levy all these bogus charges that have no evidence. They can't produce any evidence. They're never asked for any because they don't have to follow the rules of evidence as they would in a court of law. So if we could get out, go ahead.
Well, yeah, they did that in Montgomery County. I can remember when I was accused of stuff and they worded it on information and belief. And then they would levy whatever I supposedly did with no evidence at all. And you're absolutely right. And I'm just like, really? I mean, well, I can say on information and belief, I could level all kinds of stuff against them. Wow.
Yeah,
and get away with it.
Exactly.
I should.
But I've come into court in Montgomery County Court multiple times, and I file stuff on the record with actual documentation, banking records, IRS records, all sorts of actual records. And guess what? They don't care. They do not care. And they'll say, okay, well, you need a witness to testify. Even if you try to bring your witness in, they say, we don't have time for your witness. And this has happened to me. Okay.
Yeah.
And then they'll
yes.
have a secret hearing where they don't even tell you about it and say you never showed up. You know, they call that ex parte.
Yeah, an ex parte.
Yes.
Yes.
So even if you have your evidence and records or witnesses, they're not going to, if it's a fixed case, they're going to find a way to deny you.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah, they are, because it's all settled before you ever get in there. They
That's
already
right.
know
yes.
how
they're
it's
going
to go
motions.
Down. Who's?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, they're going through the motions to say they did it, but you've got all this underlying current and these backroom deals, and it's all done. I think that, and I've mentioned this numerous times, when people suffer legal abuse syndrome, which most people who engage with the courts do, I think the biggest cause of that is they go in there thinking they know what the law is, they feel like they should be protected because of the Constitution or state laws or their state constitution, and they get in there, and within minutes they realize the whole system is rigged. The law has nothing to do with it. They've already been sold out and hung out to dry. And I think this is what causes that, the shock that nothing is the way you thought it was, and the law means nothing. Nothing. The only
time
the law applies is
if they... And no matter what level,
yes.
go to, you think, oh, you're going to appeal it. Well, that's just another rubber stamp to their buddies downstairs who already did the initial...
Yes.
work to you, or you're going to even go higher to the Supreme Court. And you, in Pennsylvania, you don't even have what they call a right to the PA Supreme Court. You have to ask permission to appeal there, and they typically deny 99% or more. You're not getting in there unless you have a, you know, a big shot attorney or something. But this is what happens on a regular basis. This judiciary will certainly, in Pennsylvania, they have abandoned the Constitution. They have no conscience. They've long abandoned it. We're not even operating. These are kangaroo courts, is what someone
it's
told
like
me.
It's like putting on. It's like they're putting on the black robe of shame. I don't think you can be a judge in today's culture and not be a crook and a criminal and be for sale, wired as they call it. I don't think you can. It should be called the black robe of shame. You've admitted publicly you ain't worth a, you know. Anyway, I'm trying to be nice here.
A judge is just a lawyer with a black robe on.
A long black dress, yes.
Yeah, that's all that a judge is. Yeah.
You know, it's like priests. Why would you believe anybody that's wearing a long black dress and jewelry? I just don't know. But anyway, we got about 4 minutes, girls. Do you have anything you want to wind up with here?
Oh, well, I don't know.
Wow.
I'm just saying, I've done my best in trying to bring attention to different things, in different medias and different areas. I do go to the Montgomery County Commissioners meeting, which I went to yesterday. And by the way, a friend of mine, I don't want to say a name in case, because I didn't ask permission first. She probably wouldn't mind. She actually invited Attorney General Josh Shapiro about 2 weeks ago or so to come to the meeting, because the word out there, we've been told, was that he's still running Montgomery County, the Attorney General. That's not official. We got word from certain, insiders, So she invited him regarding her particular issue, but he certainly didn't come. I bring attention. Yeah. I try to bring attention, but guess what? The commissioners, they were ignoring all the corruption, which basically makes them they're enabling everything to go on there.
Yes.
They do fund. Mm-hmm, yes, they're funding the court that they know is committing all kinds of corruption or crimes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm drawing, I don't know what else.
It's awful.
You need like this million man march type of thing to occur, I think. I don't know.
You can't get these people up. Deidre Gilbertson and I did a show here a couple years ago that we titled, "What Does It Take to Get You on Your Feet?" I was so thankful for all the people that showed up at the summit. We had people from 14 states. But we should have shown up en masse. Like the lobbyists that crawl all over on Capitol Hill. There should have been as many of us there. I appreciate everybody that made that trip to be there to support us. And it meant a lot. And it was very humbling to meet people from so many places that made that trip for that purpose. But we have got to start showing up in numbers. Because numbers is what counts. As long as we're out here, working singularly or trying to fight this battle by ourselves, these people going into court alone and everything, they're not afraid of us. But it's going to take numbers. And again, everybody, change has to happen in your state. Organize in your state. Running all over the country trying to do something isn't going to change anything. You have to do it in your state. That's where this is all controlled at, is at the state level. So get your people organized in your state, like Kaz has over there in Wisconsin, and like we are here in Minnesota. We're putting together a large group. We've got about 90 seconds here, girls. Elaine, thank you for calling in. And Kaz, I'm waiting on the donuts. You got anything you want to say for next week?
You know what? I was just going to say it's because of the Whistleblower Summit that Elaine and I even met. I was shocked that sitting right in front of me was someone who was dealing with Montgomery County. And so I just want to thank everyone for inviting you, Marty, to the Whistleblower Summit, because that's the only reason I was there. And that's how I met Elaine. And I believe that it was such a powerful thing for all of us to meet. And I can't wait for next year to be even more powerful.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Thank you also. Thanks for having me on the show, Marty. And gee, I'm looking forward to another time as well. And
yeah,
I'm so happy
don't
to
worry. We're gonna have
well.
You back on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We're gonna have you back on. We may take you to Alaska with us. We don't know.
But oh, I'd love to go there. Well, actually, I have.
We want to go in the summer.
In the summer. I've been there, and I just love it. And it's really beautiful there, but
oh, wow.
I guess they got their share of problems as well.
Well, we're all done here, everybody. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Hopefully, we'll be back next week if Kaz doesn't have wedding cakes to make, and we'll talk to you all then. And thanks,
everybody.
Okay,
thank you. Bye-bye. Bye, folks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Yeah, good night.